We're pushing deeper into the wormhole, David whispered. Don't give up on me now.
The image fragmented further, its elements crumbling and multiplying in a repeating pattern around the disc-shaped image. It was a three-dimensional kaleidoscope, David thought, formed by multiple images of the lab's illumination. He glanced at counter readouts, which told him that much of the energy of the light falling into the wormhole had been shifted to the ultraviolet and beyond, and the energized radiation was pounding the curved walls of this space-time tunnel. But the wormhole was holding. They were far past the point where all previous experiments had collapsed. Now, the disc image began to shrink as the light, falling from three dimensions onto the wormhole mouth, was compressed by the wormhole's throat into a narrowing pipe. The scrambled, shrinking puddle of light reached a peak of distortion, and then the quality of light changed. The multiple image structure became simpler, expanding, seeming to unscramble itself, and David began to pick out elements of a new visual field, a smear of blue that might be sky, a pale white that could be an instrument box. He said, "Call Iram." Bobby said, "What are we looking at?"
"Just call Father, Bobby."
Hiram arrived at a run an hour later.
"It better be worth it. I broke up an investors' meeting."
David, wordlessly, handed him a slab of lead glass crystal the size and shape of a pack of cards. Hiram turned the slab over, inspecting it. The upper surface of the slab was ground into a magnifying lens, and when Hiram looked into it, he saw miniaturized electronics, photo-multiplier light detectors for receiving signals, a light-emitting diode capable of emitting flashes for testing, a small power supply, miniature electromagnets, and, at the geometric center of the slab, there was a tiny, perfect sphere, just at the limit of visibility. It looked silvery, reflective like a pearl, but the quality of light it returned wasn't quite the hard gray of the counting house's fluorescence. Hiram turned to David.
"What am I looking at?"
David nodded at the big wall soft screen. It showed a round blur of light, blue and brown. A face came looming into the image, a human face, a man somewhere in his 40s, perhaps. The image was heavily distorted. It was exactly as if he had pushed his face into a fisheye lens. But David could make out a knot of curly black hair, leathery sun-beaten skin, white teeth in a broad smile.
"It's Walter," Hiram said, wondering. "Our Brisbane station head."
He moved closer to the soft screen.
"He's saying something. His lips are moving."
He stood there, mouth moving in sympathy.
"I see you. I see you. My God."
Behind Walter, other Aussie technicians could be seen now, heavily distorted shadows, applauding in silence. David grinned and submitted to Hiram's whoops and bear hugs, all the while keeping his eye on the lead glass slab containing the wormhole mouth, that billion-dollar pearl. 7. The Worm Cam. It was 3 a.m. At the heart of the deserted wormworks, in a bubble of soft-screen light, Kate and Bobby sat side by side. Bobby was working through a simple question-and-answer setup session on the soft screen. They were expecting a long night. Behind them there was a heap of hastily gathered gear, coffee flasks, and blankets and foam mattresses. There was a creak. Kate jumped and grabbed Bobby's arm. Bobby kept working at the program.
"Take it easy. Just a little thermal contraction. I told you, I made sure all the surveillance systems have a blind spot right here, right now."
"I'm not doubting it. It's just that I'm not used to creeping around in the dark like this."
"I thought you were the tough reporter."
"Yes, but what I do is generally legal."
"Generally?
Believe it or not."
"But this,"
he waved a hand toward the hulking, mysterious machinery out in the dark, "isn't even surveillance equipment. It's just an experimental high-energy physics rig. There's nothing like it in the world. How can there be any legislation to cover its use?"
"That's specious, Bobby. No judge on the planet would buy that argument."
"Specious or not, I'm telling you to calm down. I'm trying to concentrate. Mission control here could be a little more user-friendly. David doesn't even use voice activation. Maybe all physicists are so conservative. Or all Catholics."
She studied him as he worked steadily at the program. He looked as alive as she had ever seen him, for once fully engaged in the moment. And yet he seemed completely unperturbed by any moral doubt.